All right, Joel, what do you say we start this podcast off with an awkward question? You like awkward questions, right?
That is my entire dating life. Yes, please. Make me feel like I'm in a relationship. Quick question, though. When I answer the question that you asked, am I going to be in trouble for answering honestly?
No, not with me.
Okay, then it's not like a relationship. It's totally different. Go on.
Maybe we should just start out the podcast the MPM way and just give each other a fucked up question.
No, absolutely not. We are our own separate fucking entity.
All right, so the question is, do you believe in God? And if so, do you believe in possession?
That is actually something I was going to bring up later on when we get to the discussion. Yeah, I believe in the existence of a higher power.
I didn't ask that.
Of a God, yes. I believe in a higher power, central intelligence, from which all consciousness in the universe flows, thus returning to when we pass on. Possession, now that's a tricky question. It depends on what you mean by possession. Do you mean a spiritual possession, or do you mean more like the Carl Jung sort of collective unconscious sort of possession?
I mean like straight up demonic possession.
I don't not believe in it.
That is not an answer.
That is an answer. I'm open to the possibility, to be fair. I have seen a lot of spooky do in my time, so I know that the possibility exists, but I haven't actually seen a real possession that hasn't been thoroughly debunked.
I'm not judging you. You know, I don't agree like necessarily with your beliefs on that, but I definitely don't judge people for their beliefs in religion until it kind of gets to the point when they're like spewing hatred for other people because of their beliefs.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? I have a shitload of friends that just love them some God and Jesus, and I'm all about them supporting that. I mean, everybody's got to have something to hope for, and so if that happens to be what you hope for, good on you. But me, I think that it's pretty much bullshit.
Well, that's where I was coming up with the other idea of the Carl Jung sort of shadow self concept, that all of humanity is connected collectively through our unconscious minds. And when I use the phrase psychic barriers, I don't mean in the sense of, well, I kind of do, but at the same time, I don't mean in the sense of we are able to read minds, but more in the sense that our brains, our defenses in our minds for our own mental health are lowered, and little bits of the negativity in the collective unconscious sort of take residence in our brain. This is why I don't date, because I have this fucking information. Literally, we could make the entire podcast today about that. I could just go.
So going into the possession part of it, I do believe that there is positive energy and negative energy in this world. Like, that is basically proven at this point. And I do think that maybe negative energy can become so overwhelming that it completely takes over somebody, takes over their mental health, takes over their physical health. Because when people grieve or when people have extreme mental health problems, like, their brain goes through a physical change. I mean, it's been proven. You can actually see it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think that it's possible that somebody can become so filled with negative energy that they essentially change who they are. They become a different person. And in my opinion, that is a version of possession. That is what I see when I see possession.
Yeah, and that kind of goes along with the lines with what I was talking about. That so much negative energy brings out the unconscious part of your brain, the shadow self of who you are, everything that you have built up barriers in your brain to that, you know, the social constructs of society have told you this particular behavior is bad, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, you know, that negativity just seeps in and pretty much overrides the programming of the brain and just lets that unevolved dark side just come out rip-roaring to the point that you're wanting to fuck a 24-year-old youth leader and ripping tongues out of your wives. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about the devil! Yeah!
Always the metal horns when you're talking about Satan.
Always!
Kind of like you're saying, like, I think when your brain is altered like that, you can go one of two ways. You can either blow your brains out, which a lot of people do, or it goes outward and you start killing people or acting like a possessed person.
Or the flip side, which is many people talk about positive possession, which is if you look at the author Philip K. Dick, he believed that he was possessed by a spiritual entity, which actually Strangely enough, his son had a very rare congenital heart defect that he had no idea about. And when he came into contact with this positive spiritual being that came inside him and kind of took him over a little bit by his own words, he said that the entity told him, your son has this condition, take him to the hospital, tell the doctors that they need to do an MRI scan on his right ventricle. And the doctor's like, we're not going to do it. And he goes, just fucking do it. And they did it. And they found the heart defect on his right ventricle that was almost completely hidden. They would have never known. And it was ready to fucking just blow. So I'm just saying, it's fucking weird. And that's a legit...
Didn't Philip K. Dick die younger and unexpectedly?
Yes, he did.
Why didn't the entity tell him about that?
Listen, Philip's not here. I'm guessing it was a lot like the movie Phenomenon. Where he just kind of knew. Like, it's my time.
Isn't this podcast way better whenever we have a structured, like, opening?
Absolutely not. You want to know why? Because the devil! He doesn't fucking care about structure. You know what he wants? He wants to burn the world to the ground.
Not only do your neighbors think that you're a racist, but now, they now think you're a Satanist.
and a fan of shitty late 90s, early 2000 Rob Zombie rock.
I mean, those all kind of go together.
That was the persona he was crafting for quite some time there.
All right, so welcome to episode 15 of the Curly Mustache Podcast. We have reached the point, people, we have reached the point where Joel Mingle is going to suck all of your dicks. He said it
several episodes ago. No, I did not say it. I did not say it.
That's not how I remember it.
I have the transcripts that prove I said nothing about sucking dick. And there is nothing creepier than my cousin messaging me on Facebook and being all like, hey, man, just so you know.
So I heard I'm getting a blowjob soon.
Got two more episodes before I get a blowjob. Yada, yada, yada. It's going to feel real awkward. I'll pass on mine. Thanks, cuz. Appreciate that shit.
The reason we're talking about possession and God and religion and Satan is today we're discussing Michael Taylor as well as Reagan McNeil, a.k.a. Pazuzu.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
I can't think of Pazuzu anymore without, like, thinking of my other podcast whenever we came up with Kazuzu, which was Pazuzu's musical cousin.
He haunts middle schools and special ed classes that have music performances to put on. Oh, wow. Speaking of possession and Pazuzu, there was a guy who actually killed a couple hippies. Widespread Panic fans. And he legally changed his name to Pazuzu. Like, filed his teeth down, made the homemade chicken scratch, tattoos all over his face, dreadlocks, believed that he was a demon.
Also, like, if you're going to pretend to be a demon, at least pick one that is real and not made up by somebody.
Technically, Pazuzu is an actual demon.
Technically, he's not.
No, Pazuzu is, in fact, a Mesopotamian demon. Originally, he The history of Pazuzu is he is, in fact...
He's derived from... We'll get into
derived
it.
Derived
we'll get
from,
We'll get into
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. Again, this is why I'm single. Because I have this fucking information just ready to go with absolutely no planning whatsoever. It's just, bloop, there we fucking go. Now I'm not getting laid tonight.
And anytime you spew out the bullshit, of course I'm going to be the first one there to tell you that it's bullshit.
But was it bullshit?
Find out next time.
Find out next time on Steven Calls Out Your Bullshit.
All right, so let's get started with Michael Taylor. Born in 1944, lived in Ossett, England as a butcher, had five kids, a wife, and a cuddly little poodle dog.
Thing is Michael, what I think is important for this story is to set for the audience is that at this particular time, when this story took place in England, they were going through pretty much a nationwide depression. No one could get a fucking job. And those who did have a job, the government said, you can only work 3 days a week. I think it's important just for the audience and people who are listening to know that, you know, all of this is going to come together in a real crazy, religious, social, cuckoo for Cocoa Puff soup that's going to result in Poodle's legs being ripped off.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's good that you bring up religion, because this particular town that he lived in, Osset, was known in the area of being basically your small town Indiana version of England.
Yeah, it's in the Yorkshire area. We have a listener. Her name is Oprah.
Hello, Pond.
Her uncle actually lived down the street from Michael when all this took place. I was going to try and get her to be on the show, but they're fucking 5 hours ahead of us, so it's midnight there now. So, look what you're fucking missing out on, kid.
England's going through a depression at this time. Extremely religious town. And then Michael himself, honestly, I looked for a long time on this guy. Could not find out what caused this back injury, but apparently he had like a pretty bad back injury. Dealt with like dwindling mobility, chronic pain, the inability to work like even the 3 days a week permanent employment that you could work at that time. And therefore he had like problems keeping a job. So he was basically working part-time as a butcher, dealing with depression for, you know, not being able to provide, being a man, not being able to provide for your family in the 70s, which of course, you know, that's...
There's a reason it's called the depression. It's hardwired in guys. We work. That's what... No, it's not a matter of, you know, the wife can't work. It's we work. Like, I work. If I don't work, I get depressed because I don't feel like...
That's humans not...
Yes, but you're also... I'm trying to work it in there that it's the 70s, so it's just like... It just adds more compounding, more social...
I mean, I get what you're trying to say, because in the 70s, there was extra pressure on men to provide for their families. And not just in America, obviously in Europe as well. And when you're broken down, you're already depressed from chronic pain, your inability to keep a job, your mental state is just dwindling. So once again, like you said a few minutes ago, this is just this dark cloud that's starting to form over this guy. And it's just getting closer and closer to him.
Oh, it's just me back is hurting, and I can't quite, you know, it's like, I just feel, sad, honey. I feel fucking sad. I need something to fill the void in me heart, which comes in the form of, what is it, Stephen?
Jesus.
Right! I think Jesus will be able to fill me in. Right!
Right, and the like we said, this is a very religious part of England, but the Taylors themselves were not really devout religious people. Honestly, it was Michael's friend, Barbara Wardman, who introduced Michael to this private religious group called the Christian Fellowship Group.
When you say private religious group, are you saying it's a fucking cult?
No, of course not.
It sounds like a fucking cult to me.
Religion is not a cult, man. No, it is. It is.
It's a fucking cult. I knew you were fucking with me. Let's be honest. This whole thing started with someone by the name of Barbara. When has anything good started when someone... My name's Barbara. I heard you were feeling depressed, Michael. You need some Jesus in your life. That is the start to every tragic story. Barbara suggesting Jesus.
And it wasn't even just like starting to attend church. It was gung-ho jump into this religious group called the, which is extremely cleverly named, by the way, the Christian Fellowship Group, which basically sounds like a college. When I was in college at IU, there was a group right next to us called the Christian Student Fellowship. You know, it's not like that sounds like a cult. It's not like some crazy made-up cult name. You know what I mean?
They were basically, you know, kids that wanted to rebel against their overly religious parents would go to what we would call, what we always called when we were kids or teenagers, cool church. It was basically kind of cool church. And when you...
Sunday school, almost.
Yeah, pretty much. But when you say that they jumped right into it, at the end of the first meeting, right? At the end of the first meeting they're attending, Michael, who again has had no religious leanings, pretty much. He's from what I've pretty much read, he was like, right, do whatever fuck you want, I don't care. He is speaking in tongues, casting out, like, laying upon hands of this poor older woman who's, like, saying she was depressed. He's, like, up there laying hands on her with the group leader.
That just happens to be a beautiful 21-year-old woman named Marie Robinson.
Well, this is England in the 70s. Beautiful is...
Watch it.
In the eye of the beholder. Listen, I'm going to say this now about our English listeners, and we have a few. England, I love your women. Your women are beautiful, and your men are very smart. But no, he jumped in whole hog. Like, he and his family, like, it took off like a fucking shot. And the story we're going to go through today literally took place under 2 months. It went from zero to fuck all.
We say his family, but honestly, he was so much further in than his family was. He basically became, like, fascinated with Marie Robinson. The tongues thing, that was just the tip of the iceberg. As the congregations went on, they kind of started engaging in, like, private rituals. They would, like, hold crosses toward each other to, like, ward off evil spirits and, like, evil presences. He would actually join her at the front of the congregation to help her, like, expel evil spirits, essentially doing half-ass exorcisms on people that were going through bullshit.
Yeah, and the thing is that Marie Robinson was pretty much, for all intents and purposes, she was a cult leader, and she was fucking good at it. And if this shit hadn't happened, I can almost guarantee you that her church that she started would still be around and very active. No, she knew that. She pretty much knew branding. She knew sex sold. And she led this guy on. Now, I'm not saying that his behavior later on is excused by that in any capacity whatsoever. But if you start mixing depression, spiritual fulfillment, and unrequited sexual affection for someone, you're playing with forces you're not supposed to fuck around with. And I don't mean that in a spiritual sense. I mean that in the very real human sense.
Do you think they were having an affair?
Nope, I do not. Because male cult leaders, it is all, much like male serial killers, it's all about the dick. It's all about the coming. All right? That is the end result. Women cult leaders and women serial killers are all about either power, acquiring objects or things, or control. There's only been one serial killer who gained sexual... female serial killer that's been caught. Female serial killers are way better than men because they just don't get caught. Who described a sexual rush during the kill. And there have been no female cult leaders that have described getting a sexual rush or using their followers for fucking. So, no, Marie knew exactly what she was doing. It was a control and power. She loved her some power.
The reason we bring that up is because Michael's wife, Christine, actually did think they were having an affair. Because he was spending so much time, you know, and it's not like that's not normal, you know?
You know what's not normal? Every full moon, spending 8 hours from midnight to 8 a.m. with another person alone in a house making the sign of the cross to ward off devils that come through.
Yeah, that is not normal. What I'm saying was normal is that his wife thinking that they had an affair.
I would rather be possessed by all the demons than have, if I ever get married again, than have my wife thinking I'm fucking anyone other than her. Fuck that noise.
So at this point, he's like starting to show signs of change in his normal personality. He's becoming less easygoing, less like the Michael that everyone in the area knew. And he was kind of being more irritable with his wife, being more irritable with his kids, spending less and less time around them. And this is why she thought that he was having an affair. And so she decides to call him out at the church congregation.
The church congregation meeting, which was taking place in their house. They were having the meeting at their house. Now, from what I've read, there are two books, and I'll have to look them up on the, I'll put them on the Facebook page. But the one I believe to be how it really went down was, it wasn't some big dramatic, "Oh, you fucking me husband!" None of that. It was more an embarrassing, like, calling it out in front of everybody. And everybody...
the really awkward fight that your friend and his girlfriend get into, like, in the middle of a party, essentially.
Yeah, they're hosting dinner and they start a fight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know, we probably would have been on time if John wasn't texting the girl that he's fucking right now.
Yeah. That's how...
And everybody else has got, like, a half a piece of cheese and a cracker in their mouth, and they're just like... Huh. Especially when they turn and they're just like, "What do you think about that, Steven?"
But she suggested that she told them in front of the group, because again, everyone in the group knew about the sexual tension between them. All right. She suggested to him, to Michael and Marie, that they go upstairs and figure this shit out. Which, I don't know about you, that just seems like a bad idea. You can just see this Yorkshire fucker just being like, you want me to take her upstairs and work it out? Right, that's a great idea, let's go!
Yeah, I'm sure it was extremely passive-aggressive that turned really dirty, like, really fast. Like, so at this point, he just flips his fucking shit. And the people that were at the meeting said that his eyes essentially just changed, like they turned, like, bestial.
Yeah, and what set it off was they went upstairs, and Marie, in later interviews after the trial, said that they closed the door. He went in for the kiss, and she told him, no, you should go back to your wife. He then calls everybody upstairs and says, a miracle has happened! We have been purged of our lust for each other. And then, it just like that, the switch flipped. He attacked Marie. She's over there in the corner, like, screaming, Jesus, Jesus! And he's being pulled off like a fucking monster. They called the police. No charges were filed. And then, pretty much, everyone just fucking left.
So, at this point, like, everybody's super freaked out by Michael because he's basically a changed person. And they want to keep an extra eye on him because something just ain't right.
Yeah, and you know what? This is where, in my personal opinion, it really fucking gets worse. Like, this is the event, in my personal opinion. The slingshot has been pulling back, and this is when it gets let go. Is because the next day, after the fucking attack, right? Here comes Marie, first thing in the fucking morning, to Michael and his wife's front door, knocking on it. His wife is just like, get the fuck, Roy, get the fuck out of here. What the fuck is wrong with you?
And she, fucking lingerer.
And she tells Michael, I forgive you because you were possessed and you weren't in control. Right there, this woman told this guy, she just gave his unbalanced mind all the excuse he fucking needed. Because at that moment, she introduced the concept of an external force that takes away all your personal responsibility.
Exactly. Clearly going through mental breakdown. And she basically calculated an attack.
I guess she did it to try and, like, try and do damage control.
Should she be the villain we should be talking about here?
No. Cult leaders are a dime a dozen. All right? Honestly, if we did a fucking a show about cult leaders, we'd never get anything else fucking talked about on the show. She's a fucking idiot. There's a difference between an idiot and a fucking villain. This woman's just a fucking idiot. Or as she liked to say, call herself, Robert, I'm just another Jesus freak.
At this point, he's got demons, and they need to be sorted out. So what happens? We get a little exorcism scheduled.
But who comes back into the story? Who sets this all up? Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome back, Raw, it's me, Barbara! Hello! I'm back! Barbara has fucking returned to the show and has contacted the local vicar from the Anglican Church, which, if you folks don't know anything about that, the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church have two wildly different forms of exorcism. While the Catholic Church has a highly ritualized performance in which they banish a demon, the Anglican Church has what they like to refer to as the laying of hands or deliverance. They deliver people from evil. And they don't have the same checks and balances that the Catholic Church does.
Right, they don't have to go through the Vatican for exorcism and stuff like
that.
No,
they don't. They're supposed to have, you know, people there to help, but the gentleman that Barbara contacted, I like to think of him as a bit of a rogue exorcist for the Anglican Church.
I really love that his name is Father Peter Vincent, because Peter Vincent is actually the vampire slayer from the movie Fright Night. And they took his name from Peter Cushing and Vincent Price and created Peter Vincent out of it.
Are you shitting me?
No, so I really like that this guy's name is Father Peter Vincent.
I love it. Because before, Peter Vincent in my brain was just like heavy set, balding guy, right? Three extra chins with the tight little vicar fucking neck bracelet. you know, the suspenders to hold up his socks.
Can't have the devil. No, I can't have the devil in our town. No,
now I just get him in my mind. Same guy, just like, yes! I can't have the devil in my town.
So you just went full Vincent Price then.
I love it. This story just got better. In case you folks at home haven't noticed, I fucking love this story. I am in such a good mood we're talking about it.
He also brought his buddy, Reverend Raymond Smith, and the exorcism was set to take place on the night of October 5th, 1974.
Before we get into the exorcism at this point, Michael and his family were planning on going on a vacation. Like, they were going to leave for a vacation and just kind of take, like, 3 weeks, fuck off, and just kind of get their shit together, right? And the rogue exorcist was like, that just simply won't do. He got Barbara to get him to the exorcism at that church under false pretenses. Didn't even tell him that they were going to perform an exorcism. He had no fucking clue.
That would probably be why he's fucking thrashing and biting and scratching and spitting whenever they're shoving crucifixes into his mouth and fucking drowning him in holy water.
Right, I didn't quite expect this. I did not see this coming. Well, the best part is that they showed up for tea, right? And the rogue exorcist and his wife are there, right? And they're drinking. And then all of a sudden, here comes the other two. And a third buddy, like a third guy that I don't even know his name, right? He's just sort of there. And they just told him, like, this is an exorcism. You're possessed. And Michael, to his credit, he leaned right the fuck into it. He fucking threw his hot tea in the in rogue exorcist's face, fucking punched him in the mouth, kicked his cat across the fucking room. And they held him down and prayed over him for like 3 hours until the actual exorcism could begin at midnight.
Right, and that's when they tied him up and started like actually like shoving fucking crucifixes into his mouth.
They're holding him down. They're holding down this giant fucking depressed, slightly back hurt, sexually frustrated.
Just fucking deep throating him with a cross.
Yeah, Yorkshire guy. Man from Yorkshire, and he's just like, you couldn't have set this up for later in the evening. I've got a fucking lie here. Will you fat fucks hold me for the next 3 hours? Your mother sucks cock in hell. This exorcism actually only went on for 8 hours, from midnight to 8 a.m. And over the course of that time, they exorcised a total of, what they claim, 40 different demons out of him.
They exorcised 37, and there were 3 left over.
My mistake, you're correct.
The demons that they exorcised out of him, they represented incest and bestiality and blasphemy and lewdness and heresy and masochism and carnal knowledge, you know, et cetera, et cetera. All the bullshit. But they were so exhausted, they were so fucking tired by the end of this exorcism, because according to them, they had to pull each demon out, kicking and screaming, basically, because they were attached to Michael's soul.
Yeah.
But they were so fucking tired that they couldn't possibly go on to get the 3 remaining demons, which they classified as the demon of murder, the demon of insanity, and the demon of anger. You would think that those would be the first 3 fucking demons that they try to exorcise. Even if that takes all 8 hours, maybe you're going for them first.
I'm just saying, you're fucking pulling out 37 demons in 8 hours. You're on fucking track. That's only going to take you an hour and a half at this point. It's going to take you 90 minutes to pull those out if you get them there. But no, they're on fucking union hours, so they can't fucking work past their 8 fucking hours.
Yes, we're past 8 hours. Unless you're going to pay us triple time, those demons are going to have to wait. Yes.
All I'm saying is that we don't even have to get to that point. Like, maybe just let incest stay in there for another day. You know? It's not like he was living with brothers or sisters or something like that. Like, maybe use the first few hours to focus on insanity.
Yeah, his wife kept asking him, why are you pulling these demons out there? You know, he's never done this, like, incest or, you know, shit like that. And they told him, it's like, oh no, they've attached themselves to him. They will cause him to do it. So what they fucking did, what these ignorant fucks did, is told a clearly mentally unstable guy that they believe is possessed, right? Who himself believes him to be possessed by external demonic beings that you have these things, murder, insanity, and anger inside you right now, and they will come out at any fucking time.
You know why they didn't exorcise those three demons? I have a perfectly good explanation for it.
Oh, right, right. Scones? They had to get their scones?
Because it all was bullshit.
Let's go a little side trip here. Is it really bullshit, though? Like, legitimately...
The entire thing is not bullshit. Like I said in the beginning of the podcast, I truly believe that he was a different person at this point because of his mental state and because of the shit that had been force-fed to him. What I'm saying is bullshit is that they were pulling individual demons for different emotions out of his body. Now, maybe he believed they were. Maybe Michael believed they were. But I'm saying that whatever the priests were doing was total bullshit.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Because I...
Not that the possession was
bullshit. Okay. Because I was literally about to go into a long-winded rant about dumb shit. I'm going to shut up now.
If I were to say that, that would just completely counter what I... What I said I believed at the beginning of the podcast.
And I say this not to be sarcastic in any way, but thank God that Michael's wife had the foresight to have her neighbors take their five kids over to their grandma's house.
Yeah.
So that they could go home, get a couple hours of shut... The plan was to go home, get a couple hours of shut-eye, and then come back to the church and fucking finish this thing, right?
Right.
That... did not go as planned. And ladies and gentlemen, we are about to go into some cringe territory. And I don't mean cringe in, ew, that's so embarrassing. We're about to go into, oh, that's fucked up, yo. We're about to go into F-U-Y territory. Fucked up, yo territory.
I live in that territory.
You are that territory.
That's right. So stay out, bitch.
Steven, tell him what happened.
Okay, so the priests leave, and 2 hours goes by. You know, I'm really interested to know what happened in these 2 hours. I really wish I was a fly on the wall between 8 and 10 a.m. so that I could know what transpired to set off the reaction.
You gotta think that... Because I like to look at events as if it's kind of like a movie, kind of breaking down what happened as if I were shooting a film, right? And there has to be a moment, like, it had to be the most frightening few moments for his wife. Because, you know, Michael said that he went into the bathroom and he felt a pain in his head. And he said that is the last thing he remembers.
So what happened in 2 hours? I mean, 2 hours is a long fucking time.
I'll tell you what happened in those 2 hours. Michael blacked out and Shadow Michael came out. Shadow Michael strangled his wife, but didn't kill her. Reached his hand down her throat and pulled her fucking tongue out. He then proceeded to claw her face off. And when I mean claw her face off, I mean dig his fingernails in there and yank off giant chunks of flesh, her face, just ripping it off to the bone and throwing it on the wall like it's some sort of demonic, bloody Jackson Pollock painting that he's fucking working on.
Didn't he smear the blood all over himself, too?
Not her blood.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah, afterwards, the poodle... God love the poodle. The poodle probably tried to save Michael's wife. The poodle got his limbs ripped off.
He also gouged out his wife's eyes.
Yeah, and the dog's eyes, and ripped the dog's tongue out.
And then smeared the dog's blood all over himself, right?
Yeah, and you folks have to remember, the entire story that we just told you, and where we're going to conclusion, has taken less than 2 months. It was at 10 o'clock, the police were called because the neighbors were complaining that Michael's walking down the street completely fucking naked, covered in what they said was red paint. From what I read is that he was completely silent until the police came up. And when the police found him and the first police officer just looked at him and went, fuck me, that's not paint. That's not paint at all. What is that? And all he would say is, that's when he started talking, because they found him in in the fucking fetal position in someone's front fucking yard. And they're like, what is that on you? And he's like, This is the blood of Satan! This is the blood of Satan! And that's all he fucking said.
Spoiler alert, it wasn't the blood of Satan.
It was the blood of Fifi. The poodle. The cop licked it like the blood, like got a little blood smeared on his fingers, like, that's not Satan's blood. That's a Pomeranian. Mixed with a poodle. That's mutt blood right there.
A Poodleranian, if I may.
He's a Poodleranian.
After his arrest, of course he was arrested this time because they were led back to the house where they found the bodies. But after his arrest, during the trial, like you had previously brought up, Joel, like Michael said he had absolutely no recollection of killing them and claimed that, of course, he had been under the control of supernatural forces and that he and his wife both were possessed by demons.
Bullshit! Bullshit! I'm sorry, what?
Listen, I was possessed by a demon. She was possessed by a demon. My demon wanted to be the only demon. She was fucking coming onto my turf. So
I showed that demon what's what. Yeah, okay. I don't see that actually working in any court of law, except it fucking did.
Yes, exactly. The defense actually figured out that the Christian fellowship group that he was a part of was, like we had been saying this entire podcast, more of a fanatical cult. You know, the defense claimed that they used potent mind control, indoctrination, exacerbated all these mental issues that were, you know, popping up and took advantage of the depression, because that's what cults do. They prey on weak people and then they exploit them. Like, that is cult 101, which is a new class that I'm going to start teaching. If anybody wants to join it, just email me and pay me $5,000.
That sounds almost cultish, if one might say. If I might be so bold as to...
It's not a cult. It is a class. It's a fucking
it's a class. of secret knowledge that only you have access to, that you're willing to give to people who will follow you in exchange for goods and services. Sounds like a fucking cult to me.
Listen, there will be donuts at my meeting. But if you stay less than 15 minutes, you only get chocolate donuts. But if you stay more than that, you get jelly donuts.
Ah, donuts, the great prover of not cults. Because we all know Jim Jones had a fucking hated him some donuts. Charles Manson, totally anti fucking donut.
But seriously, join my cult.
But yeah, he got off from this.
He didn't get off. He may as well have gotten off.
He spent 2 years... He's found legally insane and was sentenced to 2 years mental institute, and then another 2 years at an infirmary, and was released in 1979. He spent 4 years in prison and left a free man. No, he didn't even spend time in prison. He spent time in a mental institute.
Yeah, it was. So he spent 2 years in Broadmoor Secure Hospital for the Criminally Insane, and then that was followed by another 2-year sentence at the Bradford Royal Infirmary.
And if you folks get a chance, just Google Broadmoor Infirmary. That place is fucked. That place has housed some of the kookiest of the kookies.
Even though he was released, you know, people said that he never really went back to the same Michael. And of course he didn't. He fucking murdered his wife and gouged her eyes out and smeared blood all over himself naked. There's no coming back from that, man.
No, you it's not one of those things where you can be like, right, I know I did these terrible things. I know I did them. But I have turned my life around, and I am now working as an interior decorator. I found peace through setting up people's houses.
Yeah, no he didn't.
No he didn't. He tried to kill himself a total of 4 times. Possibly more.
Then in 2005, he sexually harassed an underage girl and was sentenced to like 3 years of community service. And also, he was sentenced to continue psychiatric treatment. Is this guy still alive?
That's the thing. After that, he disappeared. He's out of the limelight. No one knows where he is. He could have finally did himself in. But there is a really just good chance that he's out there. You know? He's out there.
The truth is out there.
The possessed horny man is out there. And you don't want to deal with anyone. You don't want to deal with a possessed, horny Yorkshire man. I'm just going to say it now.
Before we move on to Reagan, I mean, I guess we've already both revealed this, but just for the audience's sake, do you believe that he was possessed by demons? Or do you believe that he was just mentally ill.
Yeah, I think he was mentally ill. But I also think that...
In the biblical sense, is what I'm asking.
In the biblical sense, no. In the biblical sense, no. If you look at it, again, from the Carl Jung sense, the daemons, which is a different form of... it's just different from demons. D-A...
You're saying that like Cheats McGee would say that.
Well, no, it's pronounced that way. D-A-E-M-O-N is... you know what? Just edit it then. Just delete all this out. I fucking come to you fucking prepared. Dude. I come to this one on top of the fucking world. I am fucking laying down facts, and you are just like, yeah, Joel, fuck off. Make another poor British accent. We'll wait for you to finish your piss poor jokes.
continue your talk about daemons.
I don't even know where I'm going with this one.
Continue your talk about mats, various mats.
I'll tell you where I'm going with this one. I'm going to Reagan Pazuzu McNeil.
We had to put Reagan McNeil with a little parentheses with Pazuzu because she's not really the villain here, obviously.
Kind of.
No, she isn't. She's just the vessel.
If you watch the movie...
She is the physical villain, of course, but...
Yeah, but if you watch the movie, the demon's just like, do you know what your daughter's been up to? Do you know who she's been fucking? She kind of maybe brought that on herself. I'm just saying. I am not victim shaming.
You're victim shaming the possessed.
What did she expect if she comes in there spiritually depressed and open to demonic possession? What the fuck do you think she was going to happen? I am not victim shaming, but she might have just been a little bit of a bad person.
Just so you know, when you say that you're not victim shaming and then follow it up with but, then you're victim shaming.
Fair enough.
All right, so Reagan McNeil, she was created by William Peter Blatty for the Exorcist novel and the movies. She was portrayed by Linda Blair in both The Exorcist and The Exorcist II, The Heretic. She was portrayed by Lydia Wilson for the BBC radio show, and then by Gina Davis in the Exorcist TV series, which I heard was a total piece of shit.
You know what? I've not seen it. I kind of want to watch it because I've heard that it was kind of good. Like, I heard that it was one of those shows, either you're going to love it or you're going to fucking hate it.
Kind of like Bates Motel?
Yeah. It's kind of like Fox's version of Bates Motel. I heard that's pretty much what they were going for.
Yeah, I've heard it. I mean, it got canceled, so I'm not going to waste my time on it. I fucking hate wasting my time on a show that gets canceled. That shit pisses me off.
Firefly got canceled, so that, you know...
Hannibal.
Well, Hannibal, I'm guaranteeing you made it more episodes than the fucking Exorcist TV series.
Yeah, it definitely did. All right, so Reagan is a 12-year-old girl. She's the daughter of a famous actress named Chris McNeil. She's constantly juggled between her mother's vigorous work schedule and her parents' divorce that's going on. Now, Chris does spend time with her daughter, like, on the weekends and when she can, but, like, mostly their relationship is more passive than lovey-dovey.
Yeah, it's one of those, hey, you're my parent. Fuck off. Yeah, I love you, too. Kind of. It's a divorce relationship, what they're going through right now.
Right. I mean, they love each other, but...
They don't like each other.
They don't necessarily have time for each other, and the mom isn't exactly seeking out to her 12-year-old daughter's, you know, emotional needs.
Who is the actress who played the mother in The Exorcist?
Chris McNeil was played by Ellen Burstyn.
Because that particular actress, every role she fucking plays is this mom. The mom who doesn't have time for her fucking kids, or is going through some sort of... personal issue and pretty much puts everyone else on the fucking back burner.
So at this point, you know, Reagan's kind of feeling a little bit open, you know, to emotional damage. Like, you know, she's already kind of shy, but really it's in these moments that she starts acting a little more aggressively, starts to show strange behaviors and lashing out. And her mom basically thinks that she's just reacting negatively to the divorce, which is understandable because kids, specifically teenagers and 12-year-olds and 11-year-olds, act like assholes whenever there's shit going on, you know? Like, it's understandable. It's called adolescence, you know?
Yeah, but you think... Listen, I've watched these movies. I've watched... You name an exorcism-style movie, and I've probably watched it, and one thing that never ceases to fucking amaze me is how people are so fucking blind to this shit. Your kid has superhuman strength, is speaking languages they're not supposed to fucking know, and they're literally reading your fucking mind. They all just assume that they're fucking acting out. Your kid threw a Buick yesterday. That's a bit past fucking acting out.
To be fair, in the movie, she doesn't underestimate. Basically, the turning point is when they're having this party, this dinner party, and Reagan just walks into it and just pisses all over herself.
Ah.
And that's when Chris thinks, oh, shit, there's something fucking wrong. And that's when she thinks there's something medically wrong. It's not until later, after she takes her in for a bunch of different medical tests and nothing is showing up, that she shows Chris the ability of super strength, and the bed floats off the fucking floor and starts rattling, and like she's flying all over the bed, which that scene fucked up Linda Blair's back for fucking ever, by the way.
Really? Huh. Okay. You learn something new every day.
It was when she was bouncing up and down on the bed. She had these cables attached, a harness attached to her.
Oh, yeah. Back. Okay. My bad. I do remember this now.
She was like weirdly contorted and like fucked up her spine.
I really would have thought the scene that, you know, that like that what really would have made the mom think something might, maybe she's not reacting badly, was when she was stabbing her gash with a crucifix while screaming, "Fuck Jesus! Do you know what your little girl did with a cunt?"
Yeah, and fuck me over and over again.
I don't know why I get the mental image. Like, every time I want to do the voice, it ends up being my, like, really bad impression of Nick Nolte.
The similarity is Nick Nolte and Reagan at this point look like melted candles. Like we were saying, you know, Chris at this point is like, okay, something's seriously fucking wrong. She, at the suggestion of her psychiatrist, she calls Father Damien Karras, who he's pretty reluctant to do an exorcism on Reagan because, unlike the Anglican Church, you actually do have to go through the fucking Vatican if you want to perform an exorcism through the Catholic Church.
Say what you will about the Catholic Church. You know, soul-draining, life-force-stealing,
rapist,
pack of jackasses. But they do have checks and balances when it comes to that. You do have to give them credit for having their act together. I mean, centuries upon centuries of, you know, destroying countless people's lives in pursuit of, you know, maybe I'm just proud that they learned something. Off my soapbox, please continue.
Father Karras, you know, does a study on Reagan, and this is where she starts to show a little bit more demonic shit. Gets a little creepy. At this point, he is totally convinced that an exorcism needs to happen. He contacts a more experienced priest that actually has a little bit of experience with at least the statue of Pazuzu and the feeling of Pazuzu from earlier in the story. Father Lancaster Marin, by the way. What a good name.
Yeah, Father Marin is just a great name. Like, that is either a failed comedian who got a second jump at his career podcasting name, or just like a biblical action hero.
He's played by Max von Sydow in this movie. And like, it's incredible how old they made him look for this movie. Because I think he was only in his 30s when this came out.
Yeah, Father Karras, the guy who played Father Karras, was actually older than Max von Sydow.
He was 45.
When you mentioned that, you know, Father Karras had some experience with the feeling and statue of Pazuzu, you need to watch those Exorcist, the beginning prequels that they made.
I've seen them.
Yeah, that is some shit.
The only good part of that movie is the hyenas part. Father Marin comes over.
And here's where we get that great fucking music.
Yeah, I mean, we have to talk about the soundtrack. So we might as well now, because the soundtrack, I own the fucking soundtrack on vinyl, and it's one of the most, like, cringy, awesome musical scores in horror, in my opinion. I mean, there are, especially from, like, the beginning when Father Marin is in Africa and, like, and they're revealing the Pazuzu statue, like, the music during that is, like, nerve-shredding.
Oh, yeah. Which, by the way, FYI, just so you folks know, you'll like this, Stephen. Scottish serial killer Dennis Nielsen would take the bodies of the young gay men that he had murdered and had kept around and, you know, made like his own personal friends. He took them, cut their bodies up, and burned them in the backyard. Spent all day burning them in his backyard, in his garden, while playing the Exorcist soundtrack at full blast out his window. So imagine, it's like, "Oh, Dennis! Dennis, what are you doing? Right, I'm burning the booty! Do-do-do-do-do-do-do, do 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 from sun up to sundown."
That's metal.
Yes, I thought so.
Once they get there, obviously Father Mirren figures out that this is Pazuzu that is possessing Reagan. And so now is the point when we can go into the shit that me and Joel were arguing about earlier about Pazuzu. So Pazuzu himself was created by William Peter Blatty. He was derived from Assyrian and Babylonian mythology, but the demon name himself and the look of the demon was created by William Peter Blatty.
Okay, my bad.
Pazuzu, of course, is this demon king of the wind and son of Hanbi, who is like the god of evil in like Babylonian mythology. Yeah, so this long exorcism occurs. It's super frightening. This is where Reagan like turns into Father Karras' dead mother, talks about how she's like fucking sucking dicks in hell. Like, this is where he's turning the... This is where you get the classic head-turning scene where she turns the head all the way around. This is where you get the pea soup scene where she vomits pea soup all over Father Karras and Father Mirren. It's such a good scene. This is such a fantastic movie. If any of our listeners out there have not seen The Exorcist, you really need to. Even if you're scared of horror movies, like, it's such an important movie in horror. And we'll talk about like the accolades here in a minute, but like, it really is just, it's a must-see for all movie lovers.
Absolutely. And if you folks get a chance, look on iTunes and look up Foundry, and the name of the particular podcast is Behind the Exorcist. It's a really neat, like, kind of a mix between documentary and a little bit of a fictionalized story, but they give the full background for the details of how The Exorcist was made, what it did to their careers, what it did to, you know, the director's career, and it's just fascinating. There's my suggestion for the day.
The exorcism works, but Father Mirren dies of a heart attack, like, right at the end of it, which is, like, super fucking bummer, by the way. Like, that's, like, the most bummer part about the movie is you're like, God damn it, really? Fucking heart attack?
Well, yeah, dude, you look like you're 90 and you're fighting a demon. I'm surprised they're all still alive.
Yeah. Father Karras actually finishes it up, and he lures Pazuzu into his own body, and then he just fucking yeets himself out the window. And then, like, you know, kills himself so that Pazuzu doesn't continue on. Which, spoiler alert, that does nothing.
Sure it does. It gives you two other movies, both of which kind of suck. Third one was fine. I like the third one. Exorcist II: The Heretic. I don't want to go into it because we really don't have time for this. This is a motion picture meltdown movie.
Which if you yeah, it is.
Listen, I'm going to say it now so our audience can listen. Here's this. If you guys haven't done The Exorcist 2, I want to be on that fucking episode.
Yeah, we haven't done that. We haven't done that movie.
It's on. It's on like fucking Donkey Kong.
It's the one where Reagan develops mind-healing powers. And then it's revealed that that's why Pazuzu wants to possess her, is because she can heal others with her mind.
Well, technically, if you look at the mythology of demonic possession throughout history, people who have or are recognized as having forms of psychic abilities are often targets of dark forces and possession. Yeah, so, okay. This is why I'm fucking single. It's just information just spits out there.
Just real quick, The Exorcist 3, which is, like you said, based on William Peter Blatty's book, Legion. This is when Reagan is older. She changes her name to Angela at this point. And Pazuzu comes back and possesses her daughter, Casey. And Reagan basically has to make a deal with Pazuzu that she'll allow Pazuzu to possess her if he lets Casey go. So he does, and uses that opportunity to murder Reagan's mother, you know, because of all the shit that Reagan's mother put Pazuzu through in the first movie. So yeah, at this point in Exorcist 3, like, these two priests, of course, come into the picture again, because there's always two priests, and they exorcise Pazuzu again, but not before he breaks Reagan's back, rendering her wheelchair bound for life. So sort of like in real life. I mean, she's not wheelchair bound, her spine's just fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
These two movies, of course, they don't hold a candle to the first one, but this was the interesting part I wanted to tell you about. Like, The Exorcist, it's one of the few horror movies that could have swept the Oscars. Like, it was nominated for 10 Oscars in 1973. Like, it only won two of them, but it was nominated for 10.
A horror movie got 10.
The most for any horror movies, like, ever. And you have a few. I mean, of course you have, like, the heavy hitters that are kind of mixed genre, like Alien and Jaws. But you also had, like, Misery. You have Rosemary's Baby. You have Get Out. It's really not too common that you see horror movies win Oscars. And this one could have swept.
No argument. I'm legit not arguing. I have nothing to add to that. you are concise on it.
Go watch this fucking movie. Directly after you listen to this podcast, go watch all three of these movies.
No, don't do that. No, just...
Yeah, don't do that. Don't listen to me. I like pain.
You mean watch all five of these movies. Because there's The Exorcist 1, Exorcist 2, Exorcist 3, Exorcist the Beginning, and that first movie was so bad that they reshot it again, an entirely different movie, or mostly different, called Exorcist the Beginning, so they have two prequels that were made at almost the exact same time.
What were the last two called?
The one that was released in theaters was called Exorcist the Beginning, and that was... directed by Remy Harlan, Hollywood connoisseur of terrible films, Remy Harlan. And the other one was French art director. And it was just shit.
What was it called, though, the last one?
I don't remember. Exorcist something.
Okay. It doesn't matter. Fuck those movies.
Yeah, fuck those movies.
You know, I like pain, and therefore I will watch anything, and so I'll probably watch all of them. I've seen them all up to Exorcist the Beginning. All right, you ready to get to the bowler hat scale?
I'm ready to get to the bowler hat scale.
Okay, Michael Taylor, where does he belong?
That is a toughie. That is a toughie. Because Michael Taylor was a victim of circumstances while at the same time kind of the bad guy, you know? He gets a six. He gets a six. Yes, his crimes were horrendous, but... he's put in a fucking situation where he was mentally manipulated, whether they meant to or not.
And it wasn't like he went on a killing spree, either.
Yeah.
I mean, he essentially turned himself in.
Yeah, because, you know, he was covered in the blood of Satan! He gets a six.
I think I'm right there with you. I think I would maybe even give him, like, a five. Because of the cult stuff.
Yeah, but I think it was the tongue ripping out and the eyeball gouging... and he hurt a dog, so that automatically gets you an extra point.
He did fucking hurt a dog. God damn it, I kind of want to give him a 10 now.
Yeah, I know, but you can't.
I can't. I can't, can I?
No. What do you think about... now, I guess Reagan / Pazuzu, we're going to have to do different ones. Reagan gets a 2.
Reagan is not a villain at all.
Reagan gets a 2.
No, she's not a villain.
Here's the fucking thing. Everyone knows if you have an invisible friend... all right, and you are 13 years old, which is what she was. You are a 13-year-old who sees an invisible friend that isn't there and is moving things telekinetically. You know that shit's not right. All right,
that gives Captain Howdy is a point. Very trustworthy name.
I don't give a fuck if it's trustworthy. Things are moving telekinetically. She gets a 2 because everyone knows, unless you live in the X-Men universe, telekinesis is bad.
She's a child. She's 12 years old.
Everyone knows telekinesis is bad. My 7-year-old and 4-year-old watch a horror movie, and if something moves by someone just looking at it, you know what they say? Uh-oh, that's bad. A 7-year-old and a 4-year-old know this. My offspring know this. So God knows they're not the quickest of cats on the best of days. Sorry, kids. You got daddy's genetics. So no, she gets 1 point. She's at a 2. She's at a 2.
I disagree.
Pazuzu he's infinity. He's fucking at an infinity because...
yeah, there would never be a point when he would not be evil.
Right. There is no redemption for him. None whatsoever.
Never. He's a 10. He's an 11. He's a 12. He is infinity.
Yeah. He is a demon god. Okay? Why are we even putting him on the bowler scale? At this point...
I feel like somebody's going to argue with us, though. I feel like there's just going to be some asshole listener of ours that's going to be like, well, actually, demons could be... I don't know why I went straight into Chief's voice, but...
because that's the type of person who would fucking argue with us.
All right. So let's get to our listener feedback. You want to kick it off?
Absolutely. Starting off with our dear, dear, sweet, gorgeous friend, Miss Casey. She says, such a great podcast. I'm so proud of Joel and Steven. Everyone should check them out. You're absolutely right, darling.
Yes, everyone should check us out. Thank you, Casey. Very nice of you. I appreciate the shout out. This comes from our listener, Zaharula. She is the wonderful host of the Sorry to Waste Your Time podcast. She left us a really nice recommendation on Facebook. She said, pretty excellent podcast led by two even greater hosts. Would recommend to anyone with a taste for the most sinister of villains.
Am I blushing? I feel like I should be blushing. I really do. Oh my God. No, that is awfully nice. Thank you very much.
Yes, and she goes by Zach for short.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it. Next up is our friend Kyle. I hate you, Kyle. You ginger fuck. Felt you need to. Haven't seen you in a while, buddy. I hate you. I'd be pretty interested to hear a Manson / Firefly family episode. That would be pretty good. That might have to be later on down the road because we've already done Captain Spaulding. Ooh, we should do it on opening weekend of Three for Hell.
Ooh, that does sound like a good idea.
Opening weekend, Three for Hell, we need to release a Manson Firefly episode. Boom, in the books, on the record, there we go.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle.
Last one is from Bonnie on Instagram. She just simply said, you guys are amazing. I kind of want to be like Keanu Reeves at the convention.
Yo, you're amazing! Amazing. We also have listener feedback from two people. We have listener feedback also from our good friend Meg. She wanted me to let you know that she was re-listening to the Ed Gein episode while driving to school, had the windows down, and when it came to the part where I'm naming off all the body parts that were in Ed Gein's house, it's blaring on a radio. She comes to a stop sign, and some soccer mom in a minivan is next to her and just kind of does the real nervous, like, what the fuck are you listening to, face? And our dear friend Oprah from the UK, again, I apologize about the bad accents. She also wants you to let you know that she thinks that the show is great, and she wants you to release it earlier because they're 5 hours ahead, and she doesn't want to have to wait all day.
I release it at like 11 in the morning.
Yes, and that is 4 in the afternoon.
Well, sorry.
I'm sorry that you live on the wrong side of the Atlantic, bitches.
Yeah.
Like, America.
I excuse you. I will release the podcast when I damn well think it should be released. I'm just kidding. But really, I'm not going to release it any earlier. You're just going to have to wait. It's part of the suspense. It's part of the appreciation. All right, folks. So thank you so much for listening to episode 15 of the Curly Mustache Podcast. We appreciate all the downloads, the shares, the shout-outs, the recommendations you guys have been leaving on Facebook, the ratings and the reviews that we've been getting. It shows us all that you guys have really just been loving the show, loving what we're doing. But honestly, the most important thing that you can do for us is spread the word and tell your friends. They can find us on Spotify. They can find us on iTunes, which is soon to be Apple Podcasts. They can find us on Pod Paradise, on iHeartRadio, or straight from the source at UnitedCypher.com. If you'd like to shoot us some feedback to address on the show, hit us up on Facebook, hit us up on Instagram or Twitter, all at the Curly Mustache Podcast. If you follow us on these platforms, you're going to see exclusive content based on past episodes of the show. You don't want to miss this stuff. Like, there's some awesome things. I really struggled on not putting a picture of Ed Kemper's mother's severed head on Facebook. I thought that might get me in trouble, so I just decided not to.
Yeah. Censor book might have a problem with that one.
But if you want that picture, just send me a Facebook message and I'll hit you up.
It's fucked up.
Yeah. But I do post a lot of pictures. You know, I posted Miyazaki's room full of videotapes. I posted, like, Blackbeard's ship, pieces of it being brought up to the surface. So there's some really neat stuff on there. So follow us on all those platforms, and you won't be sorry. You'll see some really cool shit. If you like what you hear, you like our style of show, you can check out a couple other current shows on United Cypher. Motion Picture Meltdown, which Joel already brought up earlier in this podcast, which I'm actually a part of. So if you like hearing my voice, but angrier and more directed at other asshole hosts, then you will love that show.
Also filled with far more cynical rage and disappointment with your friends than you are, you are definitely going to be looking in the right place.
You can also check out Music Video Countdown. That also has current episodes running. You can listen to older episodes of some shows that we had, like Talks Over Games, The Fallout Forecast, or The Anime Alphabet. And lastly, listen to some shows from friends of ours, like Nerdonomy, The Whiskey Reel, our lovely provider of feedback, Zaha Rula's podcast, Sorry to Waste Your Time, and check out Code Yellow, a Scare Actors podcast.
I also would like you folks to leave us a message on Facebook. I am currently working on a new podcast. I've been writing the scripts. I have a test episode in the can. And let us know if it's something that you would like to hear. Because I think if Steven's all right with it, we might be able to release it as like just a not in any way canonical with our episodes, just as a like a little like, hey, it's Thursday. What do you think about this one? We'd love to hear your feedback if that's something you folks might be interested in. It's called the Edge of the World broadcast.
Yes, and once again, you can hit us up with that feedback on Facebook, on Twitter, or Instagram.
Boom.
So, with that being said, I'm Steven.
I'm Joel Pazuzu!
And make sure you stay evil.